Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 502, titled Curveball. This has been recorded on March 13th of the year 2005. This program is going to be dealing with a hypothesis that I've been basically putting into these broadcasts for some time, vis-a-vis the Middle East. One of the things that I suspect has been taking place is that the U.S. has basically been lured into a trap in the Middle East, in no small measure due to its own folly and the folly of its own power elite. Nonetheless, however, I think that the analysis of events in the Middle East that's taking place all across the political spectrum is fundamentally missing and fundamentally inadequate in a number of respects, whether one is trumpeting the U.S. as the herald of democracy in the Middle East, as the Bush administration and its defenders have been doing, or whether one is portraying the U.S. as the great Satan, as America and its critics all across the spectrum have been doing. One of the things that's been missing is an analysis of the extent to which the U.S. may have been lured into a trap in the Middle East, and specifically pitted into a long, economically and diplomatically draining war against the Muslim populations of what the Third Reich's geopoliticians called the Earth Island. Recall now that the Earth Island is that stretch of land running from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, most of the Middle East, most of the former Soviet Union, India, China, and Pakistan. That vast stretch of land, that contiguous landmass, has most of the world's population, most of the world's landmass, most of the world's natural resources, and most of the world's petroleum within it. And across the middle of it is a stretch of Muslim population. And from the 19th century on, German geopoliticians had been looking to the Muslim populations of the Earth Island, the Arabs in particular, as potential allies in order to basically affect world control. Recall that in the 19th century, the Germans were relatively late to the colonial struggle, and one of the things that I think is going on is a political realignment in the world, and I think that by the time the dust has settled, I think the United States will either have been destroyed or, to a considerable extent, subjugated. I expect that there may very well be a war of weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East with the annihilation, ultimately, of Israel, and I think that is the goal, or at least that is one of the goals of the Underground Reich. That is something that the concept of the Underground Reich is something that will appear incredible, outrageous, preposterous to uninitiated listeners. What is relatively well known at this point is not only that American industrialists and financiers played a pivotal role in the financing of the Third Reich, but also at the end of World War II, the Third Reich's intelligence system, many of their top scientists, who far from being technocrats, were ardent Nazis, and also some of their political allies and intelligence units were brought into the United States under the auspices of the Galen Spy Organization, Project Paperclip, and the Crusade for Freedom. This is all, to one extent or another, relatively well known. What isn't well known, though, and what is important for the purposes of the present understanding, is that those elements were not merely hired guns. I suspect that the powers that be in this country that brought them in saw them as hired guns, sort of homme de main. But in fact, they were working for a state that had gone underground. The Nazi political and military chain of command was still in effect. So basically, what these Nazi elements were, these Nazi elements brought into the United States, were a Trojan horse. And they had infiltrated themselves up, as was in keeping with Hitler's dictum and his instructions to raise a Hitler youth. There's a new generation in power, and courtesy of Otto von Bolschwing and his protege Helena von Damm, these were brought into the United States and have worked their way up into effective control of the Republican Party. It is my considered opinion that the events in and around September 11th and the U.S. invasion of Iraq constitute an extension of World War II, and that the U.S. is going to lose, and that the result of that loss will be utterly devastating, not only for the United States as a whole, for the American people, and in all probability for much of the rest of the world as well. However, I believe that, as I said, what we are seeing is a resolution of the events of World War II, with the Axis winning. and with ultimately the Allies, particularly the U.S. and Britain, coming to their destruction. The title of the broadcast, Curveball, is the intelligence moniker applied to a defector, an Iraqi defector, who apparently was one of the pivot points in the U.S. intelligence community's attempts to justify the invasion of Iraq. What's interesting, and what will be the focal point of the early part of the discussion, is that the U.S. never at any point came into contact with, quote, Curveball, unquote. In fact, Curveball, whose misinformation was one of the foundations for the U.S. justification for the war in Iraq, Curveball was at all times in the possession of German intelligence, and German intelligence would not allow the U.S. to interview this guy. Basically, Curveball was under control of the BND, the German Federal Intelligence Service, and the successor organization to the Reinhard-Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit. And what we're going to look at in this first article here is Curveball, and where you're going to speculate about the extent to which, basically, the U.S. was lured into a trap in the invasion of Iraq. And we're going to be taking a look at that. Then we're going to take a look at the extent to which the invasion of Iraq and the events have followed on September 11th have, in combination with the Bush administration's fiscal policies, plunged the United States down the road to bankruptcy. We're going to take a look at Osama bin Laden's speech released shortly before the last presidential election in the U.S. and his speculations about the extent to which the Bush administration is cooperating with his plan to bankrupt the U.S. We're going to ruminate on that. We're going to take a look, too, at the German role in launching the nuclear smuggling ring of AQ Khan, which has been another justification for perhaps military involvement in the Middle East. And we're going to take a look, too, at a stunning proposal on the part of certain U.S. policymakers to ally themselves with the Muslim Brotherhood as a means of tamping down Islamism in the Muslim world, which reminds me of nothing so much as Neville Chamberlain's promise that we'll have peace in our time if we just appease Hitler. Anyway, we're going to take a look at Curveball, and we're going to speculate about the underground Reich's manipulation of the U.S. in the Middle East. It should be said before we get into this first article that given this administration's overt designs on Iraq and the petroleum reserves that it has, given the fact that the President and Vice President of the United States are two petroleum industry CEOs from the state of Texas, I think that the German gambit we're going to be looking at here was no more insightful than putting out a pot of honey in order to lure a marauding bear. God knows we've set ourselves up for this, and it looks to me as though German intelligence helped to lure us into this trap. This first article comes from the Los Angeles Times of March 28th of 2004. It's Dateline Washington, D.C. It's headlined, Iraqi Defector's Tales Bolstered U.S. Case for War. And subtitled, Colin Powell presented the U.N. with details on mobile germ factories, which came from a now-discredited source known as Curveball. It's by Bob Drogan and Greg Miller. The Bush administration's pre-war claims that Saddam Hussein had built a fleet of trucks and railroad cars to produce anthrax and other deadly germs were based chiefly on information from a now-discredited Iraqi defector codenamed Curveball, according to current and former intelligence officials. U.S. officials never had direct access to the defector and didn't even know his real name until after the war. Instead, his story was provided by German agents, and his file was so thick with details that American officials thought it confirmed long-standing suspicions that the Iraqis had developed mobile germ factories to evade arms inspections. Curveball's story has since crumbled under doubts raised by the Germans and the scrutiny of U.S. weapons hunters who have come to see his code name as particularly apt, given the problems that beset much of the pre-war intelligence collection and analysis. Interrupting briefly here, as this story unfolds, take a look at the fact that the Germans would not allow U.S. intelligence officials access to Curveball, in spite of the fact that U.S. intelligence officials had asked that access, and that apparently the people in charge of this administration, not just Bush and Cheney, but Colin Powell, never really pushed that too hard, that they were quite content to sit and get what apparently was just nothing but a pile of BS from a person whose name they didn't even know from the German intelligence service, because the BS that they were getting fit right in with the BS that they wanted to hear. This is how you win a war. You lure your enemy, in this case, the German enemy of the United States, and you lure it into a trap. And that is what I suspect happened. Continuing with this LA Times story from 32804, UN weapons inspectors hypothesized that such trucks might exist, officials said. They then asked former exile leader Ahmed Chalabi, a bitter enemy of Saddam Hussein, to help search for intelligence supporting their theory. Soon after, a young chemical engineer emerged in a German refugee camp and claimed that he'd been hired out of Baghdad University to design and build biological warfare trucks for the Iraqi army. Based largely on his account, President Bush and his aides repeatedly warned of the shadowy germ trucks dubbed Winnebagoes of Death or Hell on Wheels, unquote, in news accounts, and they became a crucial part of the White House case for the war, including Secretary of State Colin L. Powell's dramatic presentation to the UN Security Council just weeks before the war. Only later, U.S. officials said, did the CIA learn that the defector was the brother of one of Ahmed Chalabi's top aides and begin to suspect that he might have been coached to provide false information. Parenthetically, we're going to take a look at allegations that Chalabi was actually a spy for Iran. Continuing, partly because of that, some U.S. intelligence officials and congressional investigators fear that the CIA may have inadvertently conjured up and then chased a phantom weapon system. Again, it appears that this was a combination Chalabi and BND disinformation effort. However, U.S. intelligence and this administration has nobody to blame in the end but themselves. Again, I think this was rather like setting a pot of honey out to lure a marauding bear. It's a matter of time before the bear gets into the honey. And if the bear wants to avoid a trap, the bear should be rather careful about seemingly innocuous jars of honey sitting out in the open. Anyway, continuing. David Kaye, who resigned in January as head of the CIA-led group created to find illicit weapons in Iraq, said that of all the intelligence failures in Iraq, the case of Curveball was particularly troubling. "This is the one that's damning," he said. "This is the one that has the potential for causing the largest havoc in the sense that it really looks like a lack of due diligence and care in going forward," unquote. Kaye said in an interview that the defector, quote, "was absolutely at the heart of a matter of intense interest to us," unquote. But Curveball turned out to be an out-and-out fabricator, he added. Last May, the CIA announced that it had found two of the suspect trucks in northern Iraq, but the agency later backtracked. However, in the absence of evidence to support many of its pre-war claims, the Bush administration has continued to cling to the possibility that biowarfare trucks might still exist. Vice President Dick Cheney, as recently as January, parenthetically of 04, referred to the trucks as, quote, "conclusive," unquote, proof that Iraq was producing weapons of mass destruction. CIA Director George J. Tenet later told a Senate committee that he called Cheney to warn him that the evidence was increasingly suspect. Tenet gave the first hint of the underlying problem in a speech at Georgetown University on February 5th, quote, "I must tell you, we are finding discrepancies in some claims made by human sources," unquote, about mobile biological weapons production, he said. Quote, "Because we lack direct access to the most important sources on this question, we have as yet been unable to resolve the differences," unquote. U.S. and British intelligence officials have acknowledged since major combat ended in Iraq that lies or distortions by Iraqi opposition groups in exile contributed to numerous misjudgments about Iraq's suspected weapons program. Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress is blamed most often, but the rival Iraqi National Accord and various Kurdish groups also were responsible for sending dubious defectors to Western intelligence, officials say. Parenthetically, what isn't really discussed overtly in here is the possibility that the BND, again, the successor organization to the Reinhard Galen outfit, deliberately manipulated this intelligence in order to lure the U.S. into an economic, political, and diplomatic disaster, namely the Iraq adventure. I personally do not hold with the received wisdom of the major U.S. media that the Iraqi misadventure is going well. I think in the end, economically and politically, it is going to hurt the United States a great deal. It may be that the ultimate retribution will not be for a number of years, but this has not done the United States any good. It has done us tremendous damage in diplomatically and economically as well. And ultimately, it has pitted us against the Muslim population of the Earth Island. And in the age of weapons of mass destruction, I think it's merely a matter of time before hell itself is visited upon the United States. I do not think, given the Bush administration's sabotage of the U.S. economy, that our economic well-being will survive another major terrorist incident. Continuing, still, the curveball case may be especially damaging because no other credible defector has provided firsthand confirmation that Iraq modified vehicles to produce germ agents, and no proof has been found before or after the end of major combat. Iraqi officials interrogated since the war have all denied that such a program existed. The story of curveball is now under close review by an internal panel at the CIA, as well as House and Senate oversight committees. All are seeking to determine why so much of the pre-war intelligence now appears so seriously flawed. Richard J. Kerr, a former CIA deputy director who was leading the internal review, defended the agency's handling of this case. He said there were strong reasons to believe that the vehicles existed because the defector's information was consistent with years of intelligence on Iraq's covert efforts to obtain chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. Quote, "It was detailed and specific and made a lot of sense," Kerr said. He said the CIA believed that Iraq was developing and concealing banned weapons programs in civilian chemical and pharmaceutical facilities. Quote, "You get reporting on mobile production facilities, and you say it makes some sense," unquote. Note the next couple of paragraphs very carefully. Nor did Kerr fault the agency for relying so heavily on an anonymous source whom it could not interview. In this case, Germany's Federal Intelligence Service, known as the BND, repeatedly rejected CIA requests to meet Curveball, saying it needed to protect its source. But U.S. and German officials said the BND furnished its file on the defector to U.S. authorities and at times had him answer specific questions from U.S. intelligence. Quote, "Intelligence is often based on information where you can't go back and talk to the source or verify it," unquote, Kerr said. "So you turn to the basic questions. Does it make sense? Is it logical? Does it appear he could have been at the right place at the right time to know these things?" The defector met those tests, he said. Parenthetically, I would add, no, he didn't. And this just seems to me to be Kerr covering the agency's tracks when they made a not only a stupid but an inexcusably stupid mistake. But, again, I believe that they were lured into a trap by the underground Reich, in this case using the BND in Chelyabi. And it really wasn't that difficult a thing to do. With the long-standing U.S. hunger for Iraqi petroleum, it was really merely like setting a pot of honey out in the presence of a marauding bear, as I've said. Continuing. One focus of the ongoing investigations is whether the CIA should have known Curveball was not credible. A former U.S. official who has reviewed the classified file said the BND warned the CIA last spring that it had, quote, various problems with the source, unquote. Die Zeit, a German news weekly, first reported the warning last August. That would have been August of 2003, after the invasion. Continuing. The official said the BND sent the warning after Powell first described the biowarfare trucks in detail to the UN Security Council on February 5, 2003. It's unclear whether the German warning arrived before the war began on March 20th last year. Quote, "You can imagine the consternation it kicked off," the official said. "It suggested that what the Germans had been passing to us was false. They were backing away." And again, quite possibly after the war had begun. Mark Mansfield, a CIA spokesman, declined to comment Friday on that charge or questions about the case. An official at BND headquarters in Berlin, who spoke on condition of anonymity, also declined to answer questions. Quote, "We believed that Iraq had these mobile biological facilities," the official said. Although previous CIA reports had referred to the biowarfare trucks, Powell's UN presentation put them in the spotlight. Citing, quote, "eyewitness accounts," unquote, he called them one of the most worrisome things that emerges from the thick intelligence file we have on Iraq. "We have firsthand descriptions of biological weapons factories on wheels and rails," Powell said. He showed what he called highly detailed and extremely accurate, unquote, diagrams of how the trucks were configured and warned that they could spew enough anthrax or botulinus toxin in a single month to kill thousands upon thousands of people, unquote. But Kay, who sought to confirm Curveball's claims in Iraq after the end of major combat, said Powell's account was disingenuous, unquote. Kay added, if Powell had said to the Security Council, it's one source we never actually talked to him, and we don't know his name, as he's describing this, I think people would have laughed us out of court, unquote. Powell assured UN diplomats that two other Iraqi sources, who he said were in a position to know, unquote, had corroborated the, quote, eyewitness account, unquote. The CIA later said those reports arrived in December of 2000 and mid-2002. Kay said the briefing files on the pair showed that they never had direct contact with the biowarfare trucks. Quote, none of them claimed to have seen them, he said. They said they were aware of the mobile program. They had heard there was a mobile program, unquote. CIA files showed that another Iraqi defector, an engineer who had worked with Curveball, specifically denied that they had worked on such facilities, Kay said. Powell did not cite that defector. The CIA acknowledged last month that a fourth defector whom Powell cited at the UN, a former major in Iraq's intelligence service, had lied when he said that Baghdad had built mobile research laboratories to test biological agents. The Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency twice debriefed the defector in early 2002 and reported his claims. But it then concluded that he did not have firsthand information and probably was coached by Chalabi's exile group. In May 2002, the agency posted a fabrication notice, unquote, on a classified computer network to warn other U.S. intelligence agencies that the defector had lied. But CIA officials said the notice was overlooked, and his information was cited both in Powell's speech and the CIA's October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate to Congress. The article then goes on to describe the history of the Curveball case, and note here how this, how, quote, Curveball, unquote, appeared mysteriously in 1998, and how what he had to say was built so beautifully on top of basically what the U.S. wanted to hear. And again, I suspect that's how this gambit was put into effect. The Curveball case began in 1992 when weapons inspectors from the UN Special Commission in Iraq, frustrated at their failure to find Iraq's germ weapon factories, wrote an internal report in which they speculated that Baghdad could have hidden small mobile versions in modified vans or trucks. Based on that hypothesis, the UN weapons hunters and U.S. intelligence analysts studying U-2 spy plane and high-altitude satellite images of Iraq were instructed to watch for a potential signature, unquote, of a germ factory on wheels, a pairs of 35-foot trucks working in tandem, parked parallel, with communications gear, high security, and a water source. Eavesdropping on Iraqi military communications had already proved that they were moving sensitive documents to avoid detection. UN inspectors also knew that Iraq used tanker trucks to fill chemical warheads on the battlefield in the 1980s, raising suspicions that it might also have produced chemical or biological agents in trucks. In 1994, Israel's military intelligence passed word that Iraq was hiding poison factories in commercial trucks, red and white tip-top ice cream trucks, and green moving vans from Sajida Transport, named for the dictator's wife. The UN inspectors concluded that neither company existed, and some inspectors were skeptical about the whole idea. Raymond A. Zelinskis, who helped inspect 61 biological facilities in Iraq in 1994, said he had argued that biowarfare trucks were difficult to build, dangerous to operate, and hard to hide. Quote, they just didn't make sense from a technical or a security viewpoint, he said. But the theory gained new credence when General Amir Saadi, then a senior Iraqi weapons official, told UN inspectors in August of 1995 that he had proposed building germ-producing trucks and other mobile facilities in 1988, chiefly to avoid air attack, but that regime officials rejected his concept as impractical. Saadi, who became science advisor to Hussein and chief liaison to UN inspectors before the war, turned himself into U.S. forces in Baghdad on April 12, 2003, after telling German TV that Iraq had no illicit weapons. He remains in U.S. custody. Saadi's 1995 statement rang alarms at the CIA and elsewhere, however. Intelligence reports soon referred to a possible series of three trucks that would operate as a single biological agent factory. One truck would carry fermenters, another would carry mixing and preparation tanks, and the third equipment to process and store the product. UN weapons inspectors stepped up their search and response. So did Western spy agencies. In 1996, Holland's National Intelligence and Security Agency, known as the BVD, sent word that an informant codenamed Fulcrum, a former Iraqi intelligence officer, had supplied a list of government-issued, blue and white, sequentially numbered license plates that supposedly were used on the germ trucks. But the inspectors could never find licenses with those numbers. Then, in March of 1997, a U-2 spy plane that the U.S. government operated for the UN photographed three or four large box-type trucks parked outside a garage used by Iraq's intelligence service, the Mukhabarat. UN teams swooped in and found that the trucks were filled with construction material. The UN team members then asked headquarters in New York to let them run random roadblocks in Iraq. They also asked for hot pursuit, unquote, authority, with fast cars and helicopters capable of spraying foam on the roads in case they had to chase a fleeing germ truck. Officials in New York quickly rejected both proposals. "We were told that was insane," said Scott Ritter, a former chief UN inspector who headed a special investigations unit and who served as the UN team's liaison to U.S. intelligence. "And they were right," unquote. But the UN inspections operation in New York, then headed by Australian diplomat Richard Butler, did approve another plan. The inspectors long had relied on intelligence from sympathetic governments and dissident groups. Chalabi had lobbied Washington for years to overthrow Hussein and claimed he had spies inside the Baghdad regime. In December of 1997, Ritter said, he and his deputy, a former British Army major attached to the UN team, flew to London to ask Chalabi for help. They met for 3 hours over dinner at Chalabi's Mayfair residence with the influential Iraqi exile and Ahmed Alawi, who headed intelligence operations for the Iraqi National Congress. "Chalabi outlined what he could do for us," Ritter recalled. "His intelligence guy outlined their sources and said he had people inside the government. They told us they had the run of Iraq. Just tell them what we needed, so we outlined the gaps in our understanding of the Iraqi program, including the mobile bioweapons labs. Basically, we gave them a shopping list," unquote. We're going to continue with this discussion of Curveball, who basically threw the U.S. intelligence a curveball, a pitch they just were dying to get a swing at. But it was a curveball, and they were expecting a high, hard one right down in the middle of the plate, and they missed the pitch. They struck out, and all of us, and I suspect all of us are paying the price, and we'll be paying a much higher price in particular. The troops, of course, on the front lines are the first ones paying the price. We're going to continue with this again inside, too. All of the various programs and lectures I've done over the years are available from a CD duplication service called Spitfire, one word, Spitfire. Reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Reach them by email at SpitfireList@hotmail.com. Be sure to visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. There are written, article-length, annotated descriptions of the For the Record shows in the For the Record section, usually up within a couple of weeks of the airing of the broadcast. Spitfire website also features the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. If some of my ruminations about the Underground Reich seem preposterous, and I can appreciate that they would, please take advantage of what is frankly a remarkable opportunity and a heroic opportunity to download that important book. Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late heroic Paul Manning, is available for download for free on the Spitfire website, both in Adobe PDF and in HTML. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 502, Curveball, being recorded on March 13th of 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.